The Black Doctors podcast highlights the stories of minority professionals with the goal of inspiring others. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and share with others, because the next generation can't be what they don't see. Tune in every Monday to hear our stories told by us.
Hello and welcome back to the Black Doctors podcast. This week I am super excited to be speaking with Dr. Patrick Lolo. He is a Haitian American dentist. More specifically, he's a pediatric dentist, and he's here to talk about the field and what led him to pursue this type of practice. Dr. Lolo, ça passe?
Ça passe, man. This guy, you're funny, man. Yeah, I definitely appreciate the invitation. I've been a fan from afar, I would say. I saw a couple of your podcasts, like after you kind of approached me. But even before you approached me, I kind of saw your stuff a little bit, but you know, I wasn't doing too much stalking. And once you approached me, I kind of looked at your stuff and I told you I'd get back to you. And for sure, your work definitely stood out to me. So that's the reason why, you know, I took my time to make sure, you know, you kind of let the people hear the story from a different perspective. So that's kind of the way I look at it.
Awesome. Well, it means a lot to me. And I mean, your story is so interesting, seeing the things that you're doing, especially in the world of pediatric dentistry, because we don't have enough representation in the field of dentistry, let alone peds dentistry. So we're going to get to that. But let's start at the beginning. You talked about kind of growing up in Haiti and moving over to the States. So can you start with those early years growing up in Haiti? What was your experience there?
Yeah, for sure, man. So I was born in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and my family originated from Jacmel, Haiti. I'm not sure if most of you probably don't know where that is, but Jacmel is a beautiful place in Haiti. You know, we grew up, you know, not like you would see on television about what people would portray of Haiti. You know what I mean? Like, our family wasn't well off. I wouldn't say we were rich, but we weren't poor. You know what I mean? We had a decent living. I would say middle class. You know, we'd go on vacation and stuff like that. So I had a pretty decent childhood, or I would say a pretty great childhood growing up, right? Then all of a sudden, my parents get divorced when I was a kid. And my mom, which, you know, was living in Haiti, but originally she's not from Haiti. Her family's from France. So she, you know, grew up in France, then moved to Haiti to live with my dad and raise a family. So then, boom, four kids later, because I'm the youngest out of four, I have three older sisters, so I was the last child. Then after my birth, you know, little bit later, my parents got divorced, right? So now we're in Haiti, you know, life was, you know, pretty decent at first, but now we're in Haiti with just my mom and my three older sisters and my mom, which is not even from Haiti. So now our life goes from being middle class to literally like at the bottom of the map. But thankfully, like my mom, she did her thing. Like she was in Haiti, in Creole, we call it débouillard. In English, that would translate to kind of more like a woman that get it done, if that makes sense. A go-getter. You know what I mean? Like a hustler. That's the best way I could do it. But like, not in a bad way. My mom wasn't a hustler, not in a bad way. She would just like find jobs and get stuff done. And you know, we figured it out. And then eventually we ended up, she didn't want to stay in Haiti anymore. She ended up grabbing the whole family and we relocated to Miami. This is when I turned about 10 years old. This is back in 2001, right? So boom, we come to Florida and we pretty much had to start from scratch, from nothing. So, you know, my mom, she ended up working up her way and becoming a lawyer in Haiti. But now moving to the States, you know, that doesn't translate. So she had to start from scratch. So it's just me, my three older sisters, and my mom is working like two, three jobs, you know, overtime, barely spending time at home. So that was pretty much my transition from Haiti to the state. Like, I didn't really grow up like, you know, super poor, but things took a big, big turn. Like when my parents got divorced and we kind of had to, you know, start from scratch. So we were struggling for a bit, but then once that struggle really, really hit hard, if that makes sense, that's when my mom moved us to America. So then that's when the story kind of switched. So we can get into that as well.
So as a 10-year-old kid moving to an entirely new country, did you ever think at that time that, man, I'm going to be this world famous TikTok sensation pediatric dentist?
At all, man. At that time, man, I was like, take me back to Haiti. Like, I kid you not. Because as a kid, you don't really see why your parents are trying to move you to Miami. You're like, man, I have a decent life. I have friends here. You know, I made a name for myself. I was in sports and stuff like that. Now we're moving to a complete new space, a new culture that, quite frankly, I didn't fit in at all. So that confidence that I had built in Haiti as a kid completely flew out the window. So the best way I could describe it, bro, it's kind of like a kid that's like the captain of the football team in high school, you know, those popular kids. And then boom, it's all taken away from you. You graduated. Now you're working a decent job. You know what I'm saying? So you don't feel the top of the world anymore, or you are the starting quarterback and it's gotten taken away from you. So that's kind of how I felt moving from Haiti to here. Quite frankly, like a lot of the African Americans, they didn't really accept Haitians like that when I was in high school. Like, so I had to deal with a lot of bullying, like with kids making fun of your accent, saying Haitians do this, Haitians do that, go back to your country. And these were coming from black individuals that looked just like me. Wow. And it was, bro, it was to the point where some Haitians, and I kid you not, this is a real story. Some Haitians were hiding the fact that they were Haitian because they knew they would get bullied. So like other Haitians like myself that knew you were Haitian, I couldn't even come talk to you in a Haitian way because you would feel like, yo, I can't be seen with you because they don't know I'm Haitian. Man. Yeah, bro. So that's kind of how my initial transition was from Haiti to America, bro. And then luckily, you know, I had a couple of my boys, you know, like Darren, Nash, and you don't know these individuals.
Yeah, but, call them out.
You know, I just want to call them out. Shawn Michael, Toon. We call them Toonchi. So these guys, they were on my neighborhood and they kind of accepted me. They made fun of me, don't get me wrong, but it was a different fun. You know how when your brothers and sisters make fun of you and you accept it?
Right.
But when someone else from outside of the circle tried to come in, it was like, yo, we can make fun of our boy, but you can't type stuff. So that's where like my confidence started building up again. I started excelling in sports. That's where I was really, really good at. You know, I was in soccer, I was in track, basketball, you name it, I was in all. So then my confidence started slowly going back up and up and up. And by the time I graduated high school, I was like scholar athlete of the year for the whole Broward County. So I started reaching these potentials that deep inside I knew I had, but it was all stripped away from me moving from Haiti to America, if that makes sense. So then graduating high school, I was excited, bro. But I still didn't really know where I wanted to go. So then that's when the story kind of takes another switch.
Okay. Are we ready for it? What goes next?
So then, you know, so after high school, I get the scholarship, right, to go play soccer at the University of South Florida in Tampa, right? So I had a scholarship to go, you know, it was partial scholarship, partial for academics, you know, I had my dorms picked out and then I am ready to go, bro. And then not to mention, when I graduated high school, I was 17 years old. Because when I moved from Haiti to America, I got boosted up a grade just because of the education level difference. And the fact that a lot of the stuff that was that I knew, I was at a different level than most. So instead of going to the fifth grade, I believe, they put me straight to sixth grade. And the other reason was the fact that I was born in January. And the cutoff, I believe, is like September for you to, you know, for you to start that school year. So they were just like, you know what, since he was at this level, let us just put him in this school grade as opposed to hold him back for a whole other year when he already knows a lot of this stuff. So that was one thing I felt to mention. But anyway, so going back to finishing high school, going into college. So, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I'm into sports. Sports is going so well. I got the scholarship to play soccer. I'm ready to go. By this time, I'm 17 years old, thinking I got this, right? We packed everything, true story, and my mom could attest to this, packed everything in this little minivan. We're ready to go. The day for me to move, we had our dorm picked out. I'm telling you, the day for us to literally drive off the car to go, I start bawling, crying, bro, like a grown child. I almost cursed. I don't want to curse your podcast. Like a grown child, I start crying. I'm like, bro, why am I crying? Bro, that was the first time I would have really ever gone away from my family in my entire life. Ever. Ever. Like, because in Haiti, you live in such a small space. You think you could go far, but you really can't go far. Everybody got eyes on you. Everybody knows your family. You can only go a certain distance. And then when we moved to America, we had so little. I had to stay within my family because I was getting bullied. You know what I mean? So I had to stay close to my mom and my sisters. and I was sheltered. I'm the youngest, you know what I'm saying? I'm the only boy. I have three older sisters. So I'm sheltered. Same thing come to high school. You know, I have my group of friends, obviously. They shelter me. I have my family. And then this was the first time. It's time for me to leave all of my, like, my leave my nest, in a sense. I start crying. I don't go. I don't show up. The next day, my mom is like excited because she didn't want me to leave. She's like super happy. She drives me down to Florida International University.
Okay.
And she signs me up. I kid you not. The same day I get admitted and I start school the following week. And that's just how my college career started out. I did not think what I was going to do. I thought I was going to go play soccer. I ended up not going to the school that I was supposed to go. And I ended up just signing up and I went to Florida International. And that's where I went to school, bro.
Wow. Yeah, that did take a turn. It wasn't see
exactly.
That coming.
That's why I was like, I had to, it's like crazy turns, man.
So at what point in college, you're going through at Florida International University, mm-hmm. you decided, I want to become a dentist.
So yeah, so at Florida International, I started school. It was a little rough because, you know, I'm coming from being like very like strict schedules, like I'm in sports every semester. You know, I have school sports. Like, you know, I was in soccer. I was in track and field. I was in cross country. I was in basket. When I tell you, like, there was not a day that I went home early from school. So then you go from supposed to go on a scholarship to play soccer to still have those, you know, those strict guidelines of you going to practice, waking up at a certain time. You know, you have your schedule. So now going into a university, you got to make your own schedule, right? Mm-hmm. You got to pick your own classes. And I didn't know what I wanted to do at all, quite frankly. So I was just like, I don't know what I want to do. But the only thing I did know was that my mom was a nurse because she ended up, when we moved to America, she went back to school and became a nurse. And I saw her grind and, you know, go through so many struggles to become a nurse. And she was doing pretty well. My oldest sister, you remember I said I had three older sisters?
Yeah, yeah.
By then, when I was starting college, she was about to graduate from pharmacy school, right? Mm-hmm. So that she kind of led the way in the sense of like, okay, we can do something. You know what I mean? So I'm like, all right, if my sister can become a pharmacist, if maybe I should just major in something in the sciences. So then I ended up picking up biology, super random. Like I literally just picked that just because I was like, that'll give me the classes that I need to at least be in the healthcare profession. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I picked biology. Followed through. I met up with like a counselor, followed through with all the classes. I ended up joining a fraternity just to kind of keep active and play sports and stuff like that. It was a lot of people join fraternities for different reasons, but my main reason was like I needed to find like an outside source to exert energy. You know what I mean? Like, because
yeah.
I wasn't never the type of person where I would just go to school and go home, go to school and go home. Like I just couldn't do that. Like, a lot of people would say, but you're majoring in the pre-health, you're doing this, that's a lot of work. But like the way my brain operates, if I don't keep myself constantly busy, I'm going to start being lazy. You know what I mean? So if I have 10 hours to do something that I know I could do in 5 hours, I'm going to do it in 5 hours and be lazy for the other 5 hours.
Right,
you know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So I need to keep myself busy so that I can keep accomplishing stuff. So I learned that about myself at a really young age. So I was like, you know, I can't just go to school and just go home because I know I'm just going to do the bare minimum. I'm just going to go. I'm going to study. I'm going to get decent grades and I'm just going to go home and like go hang out with the boys and go do whatever I want to do. You know what I mean? So, you know, I was like, let me join this frat because I know they played intramural sports. They were involved with doing different stuff. So I just joined literally and I played every sport they had. And I got back in that routine where I was, you know, I was going to school, I was taking all my pre-health classes in biology and still being involved in intramural sports was kind of keeping me busy on the side. And then after a while, I started meeting these individuals within my fraternity that were going into the healthcare, right? So then we started, so that was the other positive that came out of it. So we started forming these cliques where we're like, yo, we know we're all trying to go into healthcare. We don't know what we want, but we're taking all the same classes, so let's take them together. So we started signing up for classes together, right? It was a group of maybe, I think it was three or four of us. It was me, Mark Alexis and Johnny Gonzalez, and there was a couple of other guys, but they weren't like super, super close to us, but they were within that circle. So we're taking all of our classes together, doing stuff together. And then one of my boys, Johnny, ended up from the beginning, he was like, yo, I want to become a dentist. I want to become a dentist. That he, like, he was one of, you know, those people you meet in life, bro, that always know what they want to do. They stick to that one thing. There's nothing that you could do that change them. So that was this guy. Like, he already knew what he wanted to do. There's no convincing. So, but me at the time, I'm like, I still don't know what I want to do. But then I started thinking back in my life of what I had gone through. And I started reflecting of what can I use from my previous and my lifespan or what I've gone through that could potentially give me the answers of what I want to do in life. So then I started sitting back and thinking, when I was a kid, bro, growing up in Haiti, I had never gone to the dentist at all. Like, not once. Like, the people that went to the dentist were the people that were really, really well off. You know what I mean? So it was not a thing for your typical, even your middle class Haitian to go to the dentist. So then once I moved to America, my first 3 years, I still didn't really go to the dentist. So the first time that I really, really went to a dentist was like my like freshman year of college slash. So it was around when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. So you're keeping up with me, right?
Right.
So then when I finally go to a dentist, because I started experiencing discomfort, I find out that I had what we call aggressive periodontitis. So, and I'm not sure if you know that.
You didn't know that then.
I didn't know that, right? So this is when I'm trying to figure out my life. So then I meet this dentist. His name is Dr. Robert Miller. He's a periodontist in Plantation, Florida. And he took me into his office, bro, and treated me for free.
What?
And even till today, I can go to his office. He'll refuse my payments. Like, he just doesn't want like me to pay him. So from there on, once I met this guy, bro, when I came in, I found out all this stuff. I was crying, didn't know what to do. What is aggressive periodontitis? I'm like, yo, I'm a kid in college. All I know is I'm about to lose my teeth, bro. That's what I know. So I'm freaking out. I don't know what to do. This guy takes me in. He's like, don't worry. I'm about to treat you. Everything's going to be good. He made me feel so comfortable, bro. And he's a Jewish American guy. And one of the nicest guy I've ever met in my life, bro. If I could say there's a walking angel, it's that guy, bro. I'm just being honest with you. And I'm not saying he's perfect. Nobody's perfect in life. But, bro, what he did in my life, bro, I will forever be indebted to others to return that favor, if that makes sense. So
that's
once he touched me like that, I knew that this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to go into this profession. And then I didn't know if I wanted to specialize into pediatric, and then we can get into that a little bit later, but I knew I wanted to be like him. I wanted to become a dentist, and I wanted to help people, and I wanted to one day have a little kid walk into my office, and I tell him, yo, I got you. I'm going to take care of you.
Wow.
So then that's when I made that decision in college. I was like, you know, I found out about this stuff maybe like my freshman, sophomore year. So by junior year, I made the decision while I was going through treatment and all that stuff. I made the decision to go into dentistry, and I haven't looked back ever since, bro. And then I ended up applying to a bunch of schools my junior year going into senior year. I think I applied to about 10 to 12 programs, University of Florida being one of them. And that's where I ended up getting accepted. And then I started undergrad in 2007, graduated in 2011, and then I started at University of Florida in 2011 and graduated in 2015, right? So this is dating back me graduating high school in 2007, and I moved to America from Haiti in 2001, not knowing a word of English. So going from 2001 to 2007, graduating high school. So that's about 6 years. I didn't know any English at all. I graduated high school, 6 years, and then graduated high school, 4 years of college. So that's 10 years, and then 4 years of dental school. So we can get into the dental part.
Yeah, I think that's next. That's incredible. So it's awesome that you had that community, that group of friends. You had that one person, Dr. Miller, who just out of the kindness of his heart took you in and changed your life for the better.
Yep. And that's one thing, bro, after I met him, bro, I've always valued in life and took to heart. Always have somebody that you can call. Always have a mentor in a sense where whatever it is that you want to do in life, always seek out for somebody that's already there at that level. You may not have it. You may not find it. It may be hard. But if you're always seeking out for somebody that's a mentor to you, that's wherever it is that you want to get, that they're already there, chances are you're going to be working towards that goal and you're going to get there. And that's one thing that I've learned through him, bro.
That's good. That's good advice. So you left your mom and you went all the way up to Gainesville, Florida. How was that transition?
Yeah, so that was the first time. So remember, I delayed the leaving, and when I graduated high school in 07, going for my scholarship, right? I delayed leaving in 07, and then I went to FIU, which was in Miami, so I ended up staying home. And thankfully, bro, that was the best thing that ever happened, because if I didn't stay home, I would have never met Dr. Miller.
True.
Which, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would have never found out I had this disease, because maybe I would have went away to school and I would have been still not caring about my teeth. You know what I'm saying? So that's another thing I wanted to get into a little bit. But then, yeah, so then once I went away, finally gained the strength to go away. This was when I was about 21 years old. It was the first time I would ever away from my mom. Most people might be like, damn, bro, you're a grown man, 21 years old. That was the first time I left my mom's and went to school. Was up there for 4 years, and thankfully I met one of my best friends, bro, even before I started school. And it's like God just knew, and he just think of somebody, your twin that you had never met ever, bro. Yeah. And that's pretty much who that was. His name is Sean Bullard. He's an endodontist. He lives in Atlanta, Florida. He's actually coming down to Florida this weekend. He comes, we're always seeing each other. So we're pretty much the same, but I'm like spicy and he's a little more sweet, if that makes sense. Like I'm the guy that's going to come in front of you and be like, cause obviously I'm a pediatric dentist.
Get y'all some Sour Patch Kids.
Exactly. I'm like sour. We walk in a room, you're going to hear me first. And then you stay long enough in that room, you're going to realize Sean is really there and he's really the mastermind behind everything that's going on in the entire room. But nobody just realized that. So that's just who we are, bro. So I met this guy. We all got accepted into dental school at the same time. And even though it's crazy, bro, and I remember I told you we're going to get into the HRSA repayment program a little bit later. But when I was applying to dental school, there was a HRSA loan. Don't quote me on this. It was a loan for minority recruitment. And we were the first incoming freshman class that was actually took advantage of that actual strategic loan that was being put out, that was given to all these major universities in order for them to recruit minorities. And we were the first inaugural class that like was part of that program, if that makes sense. So my class at the University of Florida ended up being 7 black students. And that was the most ever that the University of Florida ever had as far as black students.
How big was the class?
It was about 84 students, 83 students. And that's still a little bit though, 7, you know what I'm saying? But speaking of historical numbers, that's huge numbers, you know what I mean? So 7 blacks students at the school, we got admitted. So then there ended up, you know, we formed like a Facebook group and we ended up seeing who was in the classrooms, you know, who was in our class. And I ended up finding out, you know, all these individuals were in my class and boom, all right, we're 2 black guys and not trying to stereotype, you know what I mean? Yeah. And we're both tall. We're both 6'3", you know, I'm 6'3". He's like maybe 6'3½", 6'4". We're both like into basketball. I go into this guy's Facebook. I'm like, all right. And we both got into the school. I'm like, all right, we're going to get along. And I'm like, his dad is from Miami. I'm like, yo, this is like the perfect match made in heaven.
Yeah.
So I Facebook request this guy and then, you know, this time my Facebook was popular, not Instagram as much. And we start talking. I'm like, yo, what up, bro? Like, I'm from Haiti, but I moved to Miami. And he's like, he's telling me all his life stories. And we're like, bro, we need to move in together. Literally after one conversation, we're like, bro, we're moving in together.
Yes,
that was it. So literally, there was no struggle for me moving in from Miami and moving away, because I had already found family before I left, if that made sense. And I was like, such another major moment in my life where God just like do these things for me without me even asking. He just knows what you need and he just provides, bro. Because think about it. That was the first time I was ever going to be away from my home.
Right, right.
And then before I even had to live by myself, somebody pops up that's exactly like me and it's like, yo, bro, let's live together. You know what I mean? So I didn't even have to experience that whole loneliness of trying to find friends, trying to find people, trying to fit in. So that came in naturally. First day we're in the rec room playing basketball, talking crap to a bunch of guys we don't even know. They think we've known each other for years. We're like, bro, we just met too.
Wow.
So that made life easy. However, looking back as far as our journey in dental school, yeah, bro, we got stereotyped so much. And I can go into more in details in a bit. But like we made it easier because we had each other, but the struggles that we had to endure within each other, and you know, I'm sure one day you'll be able to talk to this guy. We've dealt with so many racist act and stereotypical act that a black man in America had to deal with while being a dental student, bro. And the stories can go on and on. But the good thing is, like I said, we had each other, so we were able to kind of like strengthen each other through it. And then we got out of it, bro.
So how, and we'll definitely have to touch on, get some of those stories if you're okay to share, but how was the dental school experience, the coursework, the patients?
Yeah. So for me, obviously dental school first year is a lot of book work, you know, anatomies, physiology, all your book work stuff. And that stuff is hard, but if you put in the work into it and you know how to study, and what I mean by how to study, everybody studies differently. There's going to be one person that goes to class and just listens and they get everything. And there's going to be another person that needs to listen to that same thing 5 times for them to get it. The goal of studying is to find out what works for you. For me, I was the kid that needed to listen things 5 times and I became a doctor, right? And my sister, she was a person that would go to class and just sit there, be bored, and it would just soak into her brain and she would get A's. So that means that it doesn't matter what your level is, as long as you're willing to put in the work. And by working smart, meaning finding out how to study, and you can find out by, you know, working with other people and stuff like that, what works best for you, that makes your life a lot easier the first few years because it's a lot of book work and forming different group studies and stuff like that. Like, luckily, I had me and my friend, like I said, so we were able to, like, motivate each other. But for others, they have to do it other ways, or some people have to do it alone. But then later on, you know, you get more into the preclinical and clinical aspect. At UF, you're seeing about, you know, 2 to 3 patients a day as a student. So it's not really a whole lot of, you know, patient activity. So a lot of the stuff that you get are from extramural rotations and from you going out of the university and doing work on your own. So as far as like the clinical aspect, I would love, you know, to have had more, but it's kind of like you have to go and get it in your sense and do it on your own. But the preclinical stuff, man, it's doable, man. It's not something that it takes a genius to do. It just takes, are you willing to sit down and put in the work to do it? You know what I mean? So that's just the way I look at it. Now, as far as like the extracurricular activities that goes out outside of that, that made it a little bit harder for me and for us black individuals, for me, I would say, is just the fact that you're going to have students, you know, Caucasian students or, you know, other race in general. I don't want to just say Caucasian students. It may be any other race. They make these groups within themselves and then they'll share information within themselves or old exams. And then you may not have access to that because they don't trust you as a black person. You know what I mean? For whatever reason it may be, they might be scared of you because it might be the first time they've ever been so close to a black person. And I'm being real. Yeah. That happened to a lot of my classmates. It was the first time they ever like literally talked and sat and knew a black person had feelings, bro.
Wow.
And it's sad. I'm being honest with you. So that takes into consideration. And the other thing is that your professors, most of your professors are white. So a lot of them don't really relate to you and they don't help you. And you see them have these little conversations with these other students and they don't have them with you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just little things like that. And then, you know, if a student get in trouble and they might be of another race, they go to the office and they're talking to these individuals, our parent might make a phone call and get them out of trouble. We as black students don't have that for most people. We don't have a parent that's a doctor that could make a phone call that graduated from this university with this prestigious. Chances are all of us are the first generation.
Right.
So you get yourself into trouble. You're in the office. You ain't got nobody to make a phone call to help you. So So it's just like little things like that. You're at disadvantage. And then there's an event that is like to my head right now. And it really doesn't have to do with strictly the dental school itself, but it was just the whole culture of being at that university. You know what I mean? And that city. We wandered out the city. We went to have fun, to party with
and this is
with
Gainesville.
Friends.
So in Gainesville, Florida.
Went to party with friends. And we ended up finding ourselves in a situation where it was all white people. We were the two black guys. And we got called the N-word the entire bus trip to the event and the entire bus trip back.
Bro. Wait, you were on the same bus? These were students?
Because we had, these were students. Not like dental students, but students of the school. And some of them were dental students, but they were not saying it. You know what I'm saying? They were just like hearing this stuff. Oof. So it just goes to show you that the stuff, and then you got to go home and you can't stand up and smack one of these kids in your face, because what's going to happen is going to be two tall, 6'3" black guys punches this kid in the face and he's bleeding. And then now we're kicked out of school. And once again, we ain't got the parent to make the phone call. Hey, I graduated from University of Florida in 1965. You know what I'm saying? That has that type of pull, because some of these students have it. Now, I'm not trying to say that it's for all, but I'm just speaking the fact from my first point of view of what I experienced. You know what I mean? And I don't want to generalize every student. I've had white students that were my closest friends, like one of them being John McInish. You know what I mean? Another one being Pedro. He's a Spanish guy. So I've had guys that are different races that were my best friends, but they will sit there and tell you as well, like some of them I've never seen this type of behavior from others that they've seen by them being, by us being around them, by the fact that we were around them and it influenced or percolated some sort of behavior from individuals that they never would have thought would have came out of, because we were around them. So it's just like little things, dude, that happen while being a student that, you know, I don't want to really talk too much about, because it kind of brings back bitter memories.
Right.
But I tell you that as a black student, as a minority student, you definitely have to be stronger and put your head down to get through and not let others affect your experience. Because if I didn't have my friends, my best friends, meaning like Sean, my experience could have been totally, totally worse. But because I had my close circles and my group of friends, it made me stronger. And those incidents didn't really faze me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no. And that's I'm so glad you shared that, because, you know, this life down the pathway to different health professions isn't just, you know, rainbows and butterflies. There's very real situations that you will probably encounter. If you are a minority student, you're probably going to encounter this at some point in your life.
Oh, it's not probably. You are. You are, bro. And sorry to cut you off. And then it's also the little things like, oh, as a student, you'll get when you're about to treat your patients, oh, are you my doctor?
Right. I got that today.
You know what I mean? Because they never had a black doctor before. And I still get that today. I've been practicing dentistry. And I have whatever many followers you want to call it. I know you're calling me a TikToker. I still get it till today. So it doesn't end, bro.
Yeah. So you made it through, you persevered, and you decided to pursue additional specialty training in pediatric dentistry. What led you to that?
So pediatric, bro, what really led me to that is just when it was kind of like another time in my life where I had to sit back and reflect. Right. A lot of time we as individuals, we try to rush this process of life and try to jump to, oh, this is what I need to do because this person did that. This person did that. Honestly, you sit back and you just chill, have a glass of wine and just relax. Things just fall into place. And I don't know how, you know, religious you are or, you know, but God will literally speak to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in a sense, that's kind of what I did when I was in dental school. Like, so I sat back after I put in the work. I was like, you know, what am I good at? Like, what in dental school have I been excelling at? Right. And then I took a step back and I looked, I was great with kids. I've always been great with kids. I love playing sports. I love watching cartoons and watching kid movies. And then when I look back at my grades, all my pediatric courses were all A's, bro. They were all A's. Why? Because I was chilling with kids and I didn't look at it as like, oh my gosh, this is work. Now, don't get me wrong. It's a tiring profession, and we'll get into that a bit. but it was the part where I felt most comfortable. And it was the part that I felt like I can be the best at this. So then my athletic nature from before, when we talked about, you know, the old soccer thing, my athletic nature, what is it for you as an athlete, right? When you want to be an athlete, you want to be the best. You want to be the best at whatever you do. And if you're not trying to be the best, then what kind of athlete are you? I don't want you to play for my team. You know what I'm saying? If, right. if you're a quarterback and you're not trying to be the best quarterback, then why are you playing for me?
Yeah.
Same thing for running back. So that's my mindset. I'm an athlete. I'm trying to be the best soccer player. I'm trying to be the best, the fastest track runner. So that was my mindset. I was like, I looked at my grades. I was like, boom, all A's in pedo, right? All in pediatric dentistry, we call it pedo. So then I'm like, yeah, I'm sure some people may not, know. So then I'm like, yo, this is easy for me. Like, I'm good with kids. It comes like this, and I'm killing it. So I know I could be the best at this. I just knew I could be the best at this. That was before I am what I am today. This was back in school. I'm like looking, I'm just thinking, sitting back. I was like, bro, I know I could be the best at this. Why? And I'm not trying to be cocky or anything, because I'm like, bro, these kids love me. They think I'm cool. I don't care if adults think I'm cool or not. These kids think I'm cool. That's all that matters. That's really all that matters. So then, and then I just perfected my craft with the kids. And then, so that's really what led me to pick my profession. It was just me sitting back, looking back what I was good at, looking back what I felt most comfortable at. And then I ended up picking it. And then I ended up meeting my mentor. Not to forget to mention her, because if she listens to this interview, she's definitely going to be like, you better mention me. But anyways, but her name is Dr. Abby Adewumi. I like to say her full name, Adewumi, but we call her Dr. Abby. So she's from Nigeria originally, then migrated to England as a little girl. And, you know, she's an oral surgeon and a pediatric dentist.
Bro. Oh, wow.
Like, you don't meet those ever. So, you know, she got the whole British accent and all. It's super cute. But anyways, so she was a professor at University of Florida, right? The only Black professor.
Wow.
So comes to find out, you know me, I'm outgoing from this interview. I'm sure you could meet that already. I'm like, bro, I'm about to go try to meet this woman, because that's the only Black lady that work here.
Yeah.
We need to be friends. So that was literally my mindset. So first day of class in dental school, right? I made a comment in her class, a super slick comment. She called for attendance. She was calling out people's names, like, Dr. Diz. No, she didn't say doctor. She was like, you know, Sean Bullard, this person, this. And then she gave to me, she's like, Patrick Lolo. My slick ass, bro. So I go, it's not Patrick Lolo, it's Dr. Patrick Lolo. This was my first day of class as a dental student, bro. I said this. She was like, who is this person? So ever since that day, she was like, you need to stay after class and we could talk. Ever since that day, we became like literally inseparable, bro. Like, she's like my mom. I call her my second mom.
Wow.
So after that day, like, we obviously had a heart to heart. She humbled me a couple times and told me the straightforward, yo, this is what it's going to be. You know, you can't be acting a certain way because, you know, you have the odds stacked against. She kept it 100 with me. And even till today, I call this lady at least once a month and she keeps it 100 with me. You know what I'm
wow,
saying?
That's
so,
awesome.
And then that goes back to, remember when I told you before, when I met my first mentor back in high school, you know, trying to figure out what I wanted to, no, sorry, back in undergrad, trying to figure out what I wanted to do, Dr. Miller, right? And I told myself I would always try to seek for that mentor. And she was that mentor for me in dental school. Now, most individuals may not get lucky and have a Black faculty, but I ultimately found somebody that was a pediatric dentist that I was like, yo, I know I want to become a pediatric dentist. She's a pediatric dentist. Let me latch on to her and she's going to lead me to the promised land.
Boom.
So that's what I did. So in college, I latched on to Dr. Miller. He helped me with everything. I was shadowing. He was writing me letters. He was making phone calls, helping me out, whatever he could. And in dental school, I latched on to Dr. Abby. She was teaching me the way to become the best pediatric dentist that I am today. And I know that from the bottom of my heart, she was staying here and telling me today that I am the person that I am as far as pediatric dentist because of her. And she'll be proud of that. You know what I'm saying? Because of what she put me through. And I was okay with her putting me through those stuff, which most individuals would not be okay with that, because they'll be like, bro, you're not my mom. You're not this. You're not that. Why are you making it so hard on me? You know what I'm saying? But I was okay with those things and letting her like mentor me the way that she knows how to make me the person that I am today. So that's pretty much the reason why I picked pediatric dentistry and went to pedo, bro.
Nice. So it's a 1-year fellowship?
So pediatric dentistry, it was two. It depends on the programs you go to. It could be either 2 or 3 years.
Oh, 2 or 3.
Yeah. So some programs are 3, some are 2. I ended up going a 2-year program, and the programs are different. So it's just like when you're applying to dental school, you have to apply to a pediatric residency program, right? So I ended up applying to another 10, the same way I did for dental school. And once you apply, not only do you have to apply, you also have to match with those schools. So you apply, then you're like, okay, these schools want to interview you. Then you end up getting interviews. Then you rank the schools you interviewed at. So if you only interviewed at 2 schools, then you rank those 2 schools, 1 and 2. If you interviewed at 10 schools, you rank those schools from 1 to 10. And then the schools themselves, they rank you, and then you match on whatever program. So I ended up applying to 10 programs. I ended up matching at Miami Children, which is now called Nicklaus Children. And it's a 2-year program. Some programs are more school-based, so university-based. You're still at a university. You're taking a lot of classes, and you're seeing pediatric patient. My program was more of a hospital-based program where we're strictly in the hospital and we're working. We're seeing patients and we're getting paid. And the university-based program, typically you don't get paid as much. You get paid a little bit. But the hospital-based program is kind of like you're doing like an externship in the hospital and you're working. And you're hands-on most of the time. You still do some classes and some requirements, but it's a lot more hands-on. So to kind of tell you the difference, like a hospital-based program, like where I went to at Miami Children, I was seeing anywhere from 20 to 30 patients in a day.
Oh, wow.
A school-based program or university-based program, you'll be seeing anywhere from like 6 to about 15 to 16 patients a day.
Okay.
Yeah, so that would be the difference. So that was part, and then obviously I wanted to come back to Miami. That's where my family is. So that was one of my main reasons of, you know, wanting to be in Miami as well. And that kind of influenced my decision. But ultimately, matching down here, you know, they pay you. They you know, it was home. It was where I want to establish my practice. So it was the city that I want to live. It just made sense for me. So that's why I ended up applying there, and I matched here. So, which was thankfully.
So after you finished your fellowship, you stayed in Miami to practice and you took on this HRSA or HRSA loan repayment program. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, so once I graduated, when I was at Miami Children or Nicklaus Children, I became the chief resident there. So the chief resident, you know, you're kind of like just the liaison between the faculty and like the residents. You're just doing a lot more work pretty much, and you get paid a little bit more stipend, which was great. But then once I finished, you know, I guess I did a great enough job. They wanted to hire me. So they offered me the position. But originally, I really didn't want to stay because I knew what my capabilities were. I knew what I could do. I knew I could go out there and make a killing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I was like, so I kept my options open. But then my boss came to me and was like, look, you know, I know the pay is not as high. Da, da, da. It's still pretty good pay. And we don't need to get into numbers. It's still pretty good pay. But what I could do for you, if you promise me you'll stay. But he was like, I can't promise you I'll get you this. But he was like, I'll promise you I'm going to do my best to get it for you. So once he made me that promise, I kind of like really, really liked him from the beginning. And remember, I told you I'm all about mentorship, right? So that was another thing that I took to heart. So I was like, all right, this guy seems like a really, really good guy. He was the program assistant director when I was a resident there, right? And then he became the program director once I graduated, and he was the one that offered me the job. So I'm like, all right, this guy has been pretty cool with me for the past 2 years. I was a resident. Now he's the director. He wants to offer me a job, and he's telling me he's going to apply for this HRSA grant for me that's going to help me pay for my loans. So I was like, all right, so I'll stay. So that's kind of ultimately what made me stay, was our relationship and the fact that I wanted that mentorship and the fact that eventually, like I said, I didn't know I was going to get the loan repayment. A year later, the loan repayment thing came through and I was accepted. And it's a 5-year program where each year they pay you increasingly more and more. And that money pretty much is a check they write to you and then you pay to your loans. And pretty much like that's the one number I could throw out there because most of us are medical and we have numbers. I had 400K plus loans, bro.
Wow.
And once I finish this program, I'm not going to have any loans.
In 5 years?
Yeah.
They take anesthesiologists?
You're funny, bro. But yeah, so in 5 years, I'm not going to owe any money. And you know what's so crazy that I'm so blessed with this is the fact that when I was in dental school, about to graduate, and I was talking to Sean Bullard. Remember, my boy that we were a roommate. I told him, I was like, you know what, bro? When I graduate, I don't think I really want to like buy an expensive house and buy an expensive car. I think I just want to lay low key and pay off all my loans in 5 years. I told him that. He was like, he laughed at me. He was like, nah, bro, that ain't gonna happen. He literally, bro, if you talk to him, he'll tell you that. And then that's just the situation that I got into, bro. And then I got that program. And that the HRSA program, just to talk about it a little bit more, we call it HRSA. It's HRSA. Don't ask me what that stands for. You can look it up. So it's pretty much a program to retain minorities as faculties and different programs. So it could be at a federally health qualified program, or meaning like a clinic that sees minorities or people that are under Medicaid. You know what I mean? Or it could be at a hospital setting, but that hospital setting has to treat primarily Medicaid. I forget what's the percentage of Medicaid it has to treat, but the practice has to primarily treat Medicaid patients, which is the lowest socioeconomic income. So the fact that I was already working for them at the hospital, and the fact that I was a minority, he was able to apply for it, and I got approved, and then they gave me the loan.
Wow.
Not the loan, the grant it's called. Yeah, so that's pretty much how that came about, bro. So I've been working there since. So this was in, I graduated dental school in 2015. I graduated residency in 2017, and then they hired me in 2017. Remember that first year I was not under the repayment program, because that was the year that pretty much I took a risk. Like I was like, I may or may not get it.
Right.
So I ended up taking a risk. So it's 17, and then 18 was when it started. So in 2018, 2019, and 2020, they paid for it. And then, So all 3 years, and this year as well, they're going to pay. And then I have another year coming up. They're going to pay for it. So it'll last up until 2018, 19, 20, 21. Yeah. So what was that? 2023?
Man, that's dope. No loans.
And no loans, bro.
And in addition to your practice at the Federally Qualified Health Center, you also take one day a week or so and you see your own private patients?
Yeah. So my job at that at the hospital, luckily, is 4 days a week. And one day we get off. So and those 4 days are qualified as full time. So which is awesome. And we get all the benefits and everything. So that's another positive with being in the hospital. So I don't have to worry about, you know, your health insurance and dental insurance and life insurance and all that. So I get all those benefits within the hospital. So then, and it's only 4 days working, and I had that extra day. I'm like, I have this extra day. I'm getting decent, you know, money with the hospital. But obviously, had I been working elsewhere, I would be getting, you know, possibly double that, to be quite frankly. But, you know, to take in consideration, they're paying my loan. So it's not really double. You know what I mean? So you have to factor that into it. But let's take the loan out of it. Then that would be double. So if you take the loan out of it, if I could be working outside, I'd be making double. Then why not just work outside and use half of that just to pay my loans? Because that's what most people would say, or use half of that to invest and stuff like that. But that's just not how I work. That's not how my brain works. If you give me a whole lot of money, I'm going to spend a whole lot of money. And I know myself, bro. I know myself to the end of myself. You can't tell me no otherwise. So that's why it goes back to learning how to study. Remember I said that? It's just learning who you are. You know, some people have addictive personalities. Some people, you need to learn who you are. I know myself. If my bank account looking heavy, I'm going to be walking around like I'm a baller. You know what I mean? So I was like, you know what? So let me do this and do the repayment program and get these loan off. Yeah, I might not be making as much, but I have more free time. I could do a little side gig, get extra income, and that extra income could go into me saving, and then I could do more stuff with that later because I have some money saved, and I have no loans. So that's kind of like the way that I look at it. But most people will look at it like, you know, give me all my money up front and then I'll figure it out later. I was like, you know what? take care of my loans for me. Let me work this gig. I might not make as much money, but hey, it's more money than I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
It's good enough for me to live for now. And I have this side gig, which is a private office that I work on Fridays. It's seeing my own patients. I run the office myself. I see anywhere from 30 to 50 patients in a day.
What?
And I make, you know, yeah, I know it's a lot, bro, but he's like, what? yeah, I see 30 to 50 patients in a day there. And, you know, I make decent income from there and I use that, you know, to save and do whatever I need to do pretty much. So,
hang on, man. Yeah. You said 30 to 50 kids?
Yeah, bro. 30 to 50 kids. It's not as bad as you think, though, because there's a process to the madness. So when you see, when I see, let's say 40 kids, right? 10 of, let's say 15 of those kids, I maybe will do, will be doing like fill-ins and extractions or actual work on them, like 15 out of the 40, right? So that leaves 25. But I mean, so seven of those I'm doing in the morning from 8 to 12. So that's 4 hours that I'm doing like either a fill-in or an extraction or, you know, whatever I need to do, which is mainly fillings or extractions. That's what you do for kids. Or placing like appliances in their mouths, like to stop sucking their thumbs and things of that nature. So, so that's what I'm doing for 4 hours in the morning, but that's only on seven patients, right? So you could do the math on how much time I spend with each patient. And then the downtime that I have within those 4 hours, I'm seeing the remainder of the, because remember, I said 40 patients, so 20 in the morning, 20 in the afternoon, seven I'm actually doing procedures in. So seven minus 20, so that leaves you 13 patients that are coming in, but they're only coming in for cleanings and exams. So I'm seeing them, but I'm not really seeing them. So my assistants, the hygienists, they're bringing in these kids. They're, you know, they're doing cleanings on them. They're doing x-rays. And then I just go by and I'm like, hey, what's up, Billy? And I joke around with them and then I make them feel like, hey, what's going on? And then I look at their teeth for like literally a minute, make sure their teeth look good, their cleaning is good. And I'm like, all right, bro, have a good day. And I give them a prize. So when I say 40, I'm not like literally sitting down with 40 kids and like the whole time, but like I am like kind of like on stage and like always moving and like in a sense like performing for these kids.
Wow. So how do you, are you still taking patients?
I mean, I don't ever stop taking patients, bro. I'm just always taking in patients. And eventually the goal is going to be to open up my own practice. And that'll be in the future whenever, you know, whenever God tells me the time is right. Like I always say, I just always just go with the flow and whenever the time is right, I'll know. And then I do know for sure that's the next endeavor for me, to have my own practice, have my own logo out there and just start killing it, man. Like my goal, and me and my best friend, Sean, we kind of talked about this in dental school and we kind of share the same goals. Our goals is to open the largest all black owned dental practice ever, bro.
That's what's up.
Like the largest all black owned dental practice. And what I mean by that, have the best pediatric dentist in the game, me and there, bringing in all types of kids from everywhere, which is how the practice really starts to flow, right? Because that's really the roots, kids. They that's what grows the fruits, right? And then the parents come in, there's a general dentist for them to all go in there. And then we hire a black general dentist to come in and take care of that. And then Sean, he's an endodontist specialist. He takes care of all the root canals because there's so many kids that I have that need root canals. So many parents that need root canals. And then you have to send them out. Why send them out when he's there? I have a bunch of anesthesiologists that I'm really cool with that I would want to bring in and have like a surgical suite to have them putting kids to sleep so that we could do whatever work that they need. It could be like a special need kids with autism, Asperger's, Down syndrome, that instead of having to go to a hospital where there's, you know, there's COVID, there's all types of diseases, why not come to a dental office that has it all and you just get yourself taken care and taking the risk of spending a night in a hospital? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's obviously going to be cheaper. And then the other thing is we want to have is an orthodontist in there. You know, make sure the kids are, they get all their needs at once. You don't have to go anywhere else to get your braces. And then not only that is the adults are going to need braces as well. You know, everybody wants braces nowadays. So it's like, that's ultimately the vision, bro, to have a big office that has first floor pediatric, second floor general dentistry, third floor surgical suite, for putting people to sleep to do the work. Fourth floor orthodontistry, fifth floor endodontist, sixth floor oral surgery. Like, that's literally the vision, bro.
We'll see it one day.
That's the vision, and I know it's going to come into fruition at the right time.
Now, if people want to see you as a patient or bring their kids to see you, how do they get a hold of you?
So, yeah. So, the best way to get a hold of me, I serve every single child. I do specialize in serving special needs, and I love serving minority children. However, I do not discriminate. I serve every single walks of life. If a child or family want to come see me, I'm either in Miami at Nicklaus Children's Hospital. You can just Google Nicklaus Children's Hospital and you'll find a dental department. The dental department is located in Doral, Florida, and you'll find all my information there. Or if you do not want to go into the hospital system, I also work at Boca Raton at Gator Tooth Team, and you can Google that as well. It's Gators, so G-A-T-O-R-S, Tooth, T-O-O-T-H, and Team. So Gator Tooth Team, I work there every Friday. So you can just give us a call. Carlos is always eager to answer the phone. And if you want to schedule your child with me to personally see me, you can schedule there. Or, like I said, I'm also in Miami. Or if you have any other question, obviously you can check out my Instagram.
Well, what's your Instagram handle?
And the Instagram handle is at Dr. underscore P Lolo. So that's at the letter D, the letter R underscore, the letter P, and then the letter L, then O, then L, then O. So that's at Dr. underscore P Lolo. That's the same for Instagram and TikTok, by the way.
There it is. Well, can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I've had or been blessed to speak with an oral maxillofacial surgeon, some general dentists, an orthodontist, and now a pediatric dentist. And it's been fascinating to hear your story. I love the fact that you had that sense of community and that team that brought you to where you are now, starting with Dr. Miller, your buddy, Dr. Bullard, and then Dr. Adewumi there at University of Florida. Dr. Lolo, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I have definitely enjoyed hearing your story. I know our listeners are going to enjoy it as well, and they've learned a lot from you.
Yeah, I appreciate you a lot for having me. And then anytime, we definitely have to run that back one more time, bro, because I really enjoyed it.
The Black Doctors Podcast is a nonprofit, volunteer passion project with the goal of inspiring all who listen. Tune in next week for another episode of the Black Doctors Podcast with Dr. Stephen Bradley.